Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Professor Is In podcast. My name is Kel Weinhold, and before we get started, just a quick shout out to our sponsors who make the podcast possible. And that sponsor is you or somebody like you. But if you are not yet a sponsor and you enjoy the podcast, we'd really appreciate your support. You can head on over to bit.ly/ourpod and sign up for only $3.99 a month, and you get a private network and a whole bunch of access to us. So bit.ly/ourpod, come on down. Hello, everyone, and welcome again to the Professor Is In podcast. We are so happy to see you. See you? Do we see you? I don't know. But this is Kel Weinhold, and I am the productivity coach and the person who supports you in preparing for job interviews at the Professor Is In, and I'm glad you're here.
And I am Dr. Karen Kelski of the Professor Is In, and as always, I'm delighted that you're here with us today.
If you are finding the podcast to be beneficial, enlightening, an awesome part of your week that you can argue with and be mad about, any one of those things, we invite you to become a supporting member. Your membership at $3.99 a month gets you a whole bunch of groovy things like a private social media page, a free webinar, interaction with us around a whole bunch of stuff, and it helps support our funding, our editor, whom we love very much. So if you've got $3.99, head on over to bit.ly/ourpod, O-U-R-P-O-D, that's bit.ly/ourpod. Become a member, ask us questions, give us suggestions for topics, you name it. Head on over.
So today, the second episode in our third year of doing the podcast, we're going to talk about the Netflix series, The Chair. And, you know, everybody has to weigh in on The Chair.
What's the antithesis of a hot take? Like, if the chair's been over for a month by the time people listen to this.
Lukewarm take.
Is it even warm, though? Just sort tepid. Of like a tapioca
let's
take?
It, let's call it a tepid take. Our tepid take on The Chair.
I don't know that we'll say anything new, but yeah, it'll be us saying
but
it.
But it will chair. Be us saying it.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, and, I'm with you. You know, just feels like, it feels like it just... abnegating our responsibility, or so for me it does, because having been a former chair of a humanities department, mm-hmm, I just have to have an official take about The Chair, even if it's a month late.
I have to have an opinion.
And redundant.
I am nothing.
if not my opinions.
If not a white woman, I must have my opinions.
I am Karen, and I have an opinion.
Okay, so let's go back to that warm summer eve when you said, let's watch The Chair. And I said, no. Okay.
You said no.
I said no. And then a couple days later, do you want to watch The Chair now? And I said, sure. To be fair, I said no because I thought we were going to watch it with a friend of ours. But so we started watching The Chair. And my first memory at all was at the end of episode two, begging you to turn it off because I was basically like so stressed out. My heart rate was so high that I was like, I cannot watch this. I cannot watch this for another minute. Mm-hmm. But let's go back to, the point being, I don't have individual episodes seared in my brain. I have experiences as it went along, mm-hmm, seared in my brain.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, there are several things to say right off the bat. Sandra Oh, brilliant, of course. We always loved her and now love her even more. I found myself, and this is strange to admit, and it's strange to even have experienced, but I actually, by the later in the series, I thought I was watching a real department chair. I completely forgot it was Sandra Oh. I was like, oh, you're a chair. Mm-hmm. Right. So she inhabited that role so perfectly, and a lot of people have talked about, someone blogged, I can't remember who, if I remember I'll put it, the link in the description, about the fashion choices and how More, well, the idea there being that they did a very good job of showing how repressive and puritanical the fashion options are for senior women, or women in general, senior women, women of color, in the academy, and how she never showed an ounce of skin, and she had high collars on all the time. And I thought that that was a really good point. They really, and her truly terrible hair with those awful bangs. I mean, oh my God. And like, it was like, you know, to make Sandra Oh look unglamorous was, you know, a task, and they did it. They succeeded, and she did look like, I mean, she looked like an academic in the sense of, you know, slightly glamorized for a television show, but still pretty damn close.
Yep. So before I go on with anything else, I just have to say that, you know, I watched The Chair, and then I read a lot of stuff about The Chair online, and in particular on Twitter. So I cannot at this point say that anything I have to say is my own thinking.
Right, exactly.
And so I definitely want to cite Chanda Prescott Weinstein for her ongoing Twitter feed about The Chair, which informed a lot of my thinking about it and then led me to new links by other people who I can't quote just as easily. She really informed so much of my response to it that I want to give her full credit for anything that might sound like my idea. It's not my idea. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had my own, I can tell my own visceral reactions to various things. But the first couple of episodes, definitely were informed by what I read. And one thing I wanted to point out right away was the black woman in the series, Yaz, and how she is written and perceived and everything in the series. And in particular, and I kept waiting for something to happen as we watched it, but in particular, how we got the interior lives and the full lives of all these different people except her.
Except her.
And I think that's, I just want to keep raising that point that Chanda raised first. She was the first person I saw raise it, and I just think it's so valuable to keep pointing out.
So she was really an empty signifier in the plot, and while every other character was shown in a variety of non-professional scenes and showing like their inner discourse or their complexity. She was not. Mm-hmm. She just sat there as this object where, you know, that people had to argue around or view as either a problem or a solution but something that moved the plot forward, but not someone who was fully realized.
Right. And with that said, each of the things that the character was contending with resonated, they were so accurate. Squishing, adapting, working to try to make the case for some old white guy to understand what you're doing and how you're doing it.
Yeah.
And the whole, and it happened to be going on for me watching it when I was working with two different people who were preparing for tenure. And the conversations with them around the terror of trying to make sure that some senior white guy was happy with what they were doing or senior white woman was happy with what they were doing. And that sense of like, how do I navigate this while I understand that you don't get me at all?
Mm-hmm.
So I felt like I didn't see inaccuracies in it. In terms of her character, but I thought that was such a great point. I wanted to foreground it in this conversation.
Yeah. There are so many layers upon layers of things I want to say, but I want to go back to the point that I took away and that I feel like maybe beating a dead horse, but it really can't be said enough, that the central organizing principle of the whole plot, which was that Sandra Oh became chair and then was given a list of people who, quote unquote, made too much money, which was hilarious, given that you could see their salaries were like $125,000. Although, honestly, I did come to understand after giving it some more thought that this was not supposed to be a tiny little obscure teaching college or liberal arts college. This was supposed to be more or less Dartmouth.
Right.
And if it's Dartmouth, then those salaries are probably not actually
Outrageous.
Yeah, outrageous are probably accurate. But in any case, so like a minor Ivy League kind of thing. Anyway, that she walked into this basically being told, you have to cut the budget. And there's no money. And this is what has to happen. And that was 100% my experience walking in as a woman department head, the first one in the department's history, following on a series of old white men. Mm-hmm. And I took over, and I've told this on the podcast before, but I took over the minute I took over, the minute that many of the departments in our humanities building, the Foreign languages. So it was all, you know, it was the languages and it was film studies and classics and so on. The minute that a bunch of the departments started to be headed by women was exactly contemporaneous with the moment when the prestige of being head evaporated. And it became a glorified secretarial position. So basically, and like you could say chicken or the egg, was it that it was devalued and then women were hired for it, or women were hired for it and it was devalued? But the point was both of those things happened at the same time.
Or did they want it, like Sandra Oh's character said, that they want, you know, they hand you a ticking bomb and they want a woman to be holding it when it blows up.
They want a woman to be holding it. And so basically, and this was this was not covert, this was overt. We were... the minute that I took over as chair, my administrative assistant, which previously our department had one dedicated as administrative assistant, was cut, and I had to share that administrative assistant with two other departments. So to do my department's work, I had one third of an administrative assistant who was also doing equal work for the Department of French and the Department of German. And at the same time, there was also this, this is implicit in the chair, but the overwhelming Eurocentrism and the embedded racism, which I experienced because I was the head of a department of East Asian languages and cultures, and our enrollments were skyrocketing for Chinese, Japanese, and Korean, all of them very, very strong and all on a very like hockey stick upward. Trajectory. And French, meanwhile, and German were in the tank. I mean, they were just collapsing in terms of enrollments, but their budgets were like three times bigger than mine because they were relics of the 1950s or the 1960s, and nobody had bothered to adjust it or to actually like reevaluate for a 2010 realities. And so it was incredibly difficult to run the sections, to meet the student demand, to hire the faculty on this pitiful little budget, and then look over at French and German and see this kind of life of luxury they were living because they had barely any students and comparatively speaking, all this money. Now, of course, compared to, you know, physics or math or engineering, they had no money, but compared to us, they had a lot.
Well, and I just want to clarify your sentence. You're saying you did. I'm just clarifying that you're not saying that you experienced racism. That
right.
You saw racism at work in terms
the
of
devaluing
the
of the department. East Asian languages and cultures.
Okay. I just want to make sure you weren't. No. It was clear that you weren't putting yourself in that category. So I think that what I thought was so fascinating about that was first, her character being handed the cut list, right? And which every department chair for the last several years has been handed a cut list, maybe not of people, but of you must take 3% off your budget, you must take 15%, right? There are these cuts. With COVID, those cuts are massive. Mm-hmm. What I thought was so interesting about it, not interesting or felt so real, and all of the people were so real to me, was the old white guy, Elliot in particular, mm-hmm. and I think Joan is her name, the older white woman, mm-hmm. both of them as these both stupefied by change, mm-hmm. and powerful in resisting it, mm-hmm. that they still held on to this residual power, mm-hmm. to stop the entire thing, mm-hmm. and the power of no, mm-hmm. or wait a minute, and I just remember being in department meetings and having a dean who was like waving his hand saying, The train is coming. Mm-hmm. The train is coming. We can drive it or we can be run over by it. Mm-hmm. And the really, I came into this as this life of the mind. I must be separate from all of these machinations. Mm-hmm. Would just crash the fucking train.
Mm-hmm.
Because they would not face reality.
They would not face reality.
So I thought those guys sitting in there stopping her, questioning her, uh-huh. all of that was so accurate that it was, well, that was a part, I think it was the second episode that they were so much a part of it that I was like, I cannot watch this for, we're going to have to wait a few more days before right. I can watch another minute of this thing.
Well, here's another parallel. And it occurred to me after I stopped talking on the last thematic, but the inability to face reality, the inability to see that the students had changed, that the students had new needs and new interests, that Yaz was meeting those needs and interests. She was reaching the students. They were connecting with her. Her teaching was vital and necessary and life-changing. And in the same way, and what something that I hadn't really thought about until just this conversation just now is that the chair, the deans and so on, they really were like, well, pshaw, nobody studies, who studies Chinese? Pshaw, the prestige languages are French and German.
Right.
They are the prestige languages.
Right.
So, you know, and the idea that, you know, from like 1985, well, just when I was just getting out of college, this had completely changed, that the students were flocking to Japanese. They were flocking, and now they're flocking to Chinese and to Korean because of the way the world has changed in Korean pop culture and so on and so forth, the Chinese economy. And they just couldn't face it.
Right.
It just, they had no capacity. It was the strangest thing.
But so here's the thing, and I think the chair captures this really well. It's this, because I thought about that with the classroom and of these students who were engaged and innovating along with the faculty and trying to look at things from multiple perspectives, right? And that if it is not immediately transparent, like if it doesn't follow the path, known path that people in the academy who started 20, 30, 40 years ago, if it doesn't follow that path, then it's not really quality education. That there is such an entrenchment in this idea that you're supposed to stand in front of a classroom, drone on, and if they're really smart, if they're really interested, if they really deserve to be here, mm-hmm. that they'll get it. And the whole teaching model is such a white Western male mm-hmm. model of teaching. But I remember teaching a class, and at this point I was a instructor, and I was teaching a class in grammar for journalists, a 101 grammar class. Mm-hmm. Can you think of anything more unpleasant to teach? Mm-hmm. 400 students.
At 8 a.m. in the morning.
8 in the morning, because I always used to give me the really awesome times to teach it, 300, 400 students. And I can remember this guy just giving me so much flack about all of the techniques I used. So, you know, performing grammar rock or doing, you know, writing songs or anything to just try to get you to do right. something other than diagram a sentence.
Right.
And I had the misfortune to go to Catholic school in high school and had it was a good education and a horrible social experience, but the diagramming a sentence, it was like, there is no way I will ever put anybody through that hell. Mm. You can figure out what this means. You only have to figure it out what it means so you can write a sentence and
right.
understand why you're breaking the rules instead of just breaking them. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I thought, so that whole, his whole like discomfort and hostility toward her making it interesting resonated it for the whole academy for mm-hmm. me. Like, if you don't do it this old mm-hmm. way, then you don't belong here.
Well, and it's also, it's based on fear. I mean, and one of the things they did brilliantly was they showed that he was not in all ways a malevolent figure. Mm-mm. He was terrified.
Yeah.
He was heartbroken. I mean, he is facing his own mortality.
Right.
He's facing the end of his career. He's facing the loss of his power, and he's facing impotency.
Right.
And he's facing, you know, obsolescence.
Right.
And I mean, I thought that his character did a great job of showing that. That doesn't excuse anything. I'm not right. trying to humanize him in order to say we should feel bad for this old white guy, because the damage they do is incalculable, and the program showed it. But it was it's really, you know, at root, it's fear.
Right.
Like, because, well, I can't do what you're doing.
Right.
He can't.
Right.
And so he won't, and he won't try. I mean, I didn't love the way that the show ended on a kind of Pollyanna vision where he was handing out the last scene, I think. No, I guess not the last scene, but close. He was handing out handouts for her, like their roles had reversed right. in the classroom. She was now teaching her, you know, innovative way, and he was supporting it. Like, no, I'm sorry, I don't believe that would ever happen.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know. So I didn't agree with that, but I liked the rest of how it was represented. But before I forget, I just want to say one other thing that I don't think I've ever written or spoken about this at the Professor's Inn. But during my 5-year term as chair of East Asian Languages and Cultures in the Foreign Language Building, the administration decided that we were too expensive. All of us, not just us, but all of us, all of us humanities in that building, and that we were going to lose our departmental sovereignty,
mm-hmm.
and that we were going to become the School of Humanities or something.
It was a language name.
But it did incorporate film studies and stuff, so it had to be something broad enough to incorporate all of the departments. Pretty sure.
But that film studies was over in media studies.
Oh, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong.
Media studies and communication were having their battle at U of I.
Wow,
but
I don't remember.
The Foreign Language Building became the Department of Foreign Languages instead of the...
Right, like, something like that. The School of Foreign Languages. And what this meant was that a whole bunch of our autonomy was going to be lost, our administrative support staff was going to be lost, all of these things, budgets cut, and they were going to save X $100,000 by doing this, by firing a whole bunch of administrative staff. And, you know, the thing was... I don't know. I can't speak for any other heads, but I looked at the numbers. I saw the numbers. I saw that there were some reasons, you know, there were reasons to cut budgets. I got that. But what I couldn't stand, and what to this day I can't forgive, is that they would have these town halls and these meetings and in these huge auditoriums, and the deans would stand in front of us and they would say, "This is going to be great for you. We're going to come out stronger, and you're going to do better." And I was like, "You fucking gaslighters. Don't lie to us."
Which is what the chair did really well also, mm-hmm. is showing that administrative sleight of hand.
Can't stop lying. Yeah.
And what I thought, so here's the other thing. There are two other things that I thought that they got really well, and one that I haven't seen people write about, I'm sure they have, but that aggravated me the shit out of me. But I saw somebody say this on Twitter, and I think it's absolutely accurate, that they portrayed administration and the university mission as being avoiding liability.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that mm-hmm. was brilliantly done, and
it was.
Brilliantly mm-hmm. represents what yeah. we see happen on campuses all yeah. the time. And that's, again, not my thinking. Can't remember who said it, but mm-hmm. I thought, wow, that mm-hmm. is it.
Yeah.
It is liability.
Yeah.
What's the mission of the university?
Right.
Avoid liability.
Yeah.
So all the stuff that around, you know, all of that I thought was really accurate. I thought that the portrayal of the students in that situation was really... one-dimensional, and that they would have done many other things and been much more thoughtful and engaged than this sort of like the way that it went down.
Mm-hmm.
But okay, I'll cede that point. But I thought that that was really interesting. I don't think they did the students and their intellect justice.
Mm.
I thought, so two other points.
The grad student.
Mm-hmm. I thought the grad student, how did I get this dongle in my hand? I did it. I was talking to somebody I work with regularly, that I coach regularly, who said, "Oh my God, it was like my graduate school. Mm-hmm. That's what I was. Mm-hmm. I was this guy.
Why do I have this dongle?
Person
I put it there.
Who just saved this toxic right. alcoholic man.
Right.
That's what I did.
Right.
And what we talked about, she's also an Asian woman. We talked about how what didn't ring true to us was the meeting with Sandra Oh, where mm-hmm. she said, "You're handing me a lifeline." Mm-hmm. Because I felt like in that scene and then in this conversation that was really interesting and it resonated for her as well, is at that point in your graduate career and the horrible stress and everything that she was under, mm-hmm. I don't think most graduate students would see it as a lifeline. Mm-mm. They would see it as a threat. Of like, course. Oh my God, you're tossing me out. Oh my God, yeah. I'm doomed.
Right.
What? And the panic would be so big that you might be able to look back and reflect and go, 10 years later. Wow.
Yeah. Wow. She had my back.
She really had my back.
Yeah. But in that moment. No, you're going to turn it into, and this is not a criticism of grad students because the grad student paranoia is a structural, is produced by structural realities.
Right.
But grad student paranoia, you know, pretty much, so paranoia is probably not the right word, but I'm not sure what the right word is. But, you know, this basically believing that everyone's out to get you, I agree.
Even maybe not out to get you, but they don't have your back mm-hmm. and that you're going to get screwed, mm-hmm. which is, not necessarily that they're trying to screw you,
but you will get screwed,
yeah, yeah. right? So yeah. I thought that was off.
Right.
The thing I haven't seen people really write about, and you and I have talked about it a lot, is how infuriating it was to see somebody who fought so hard, climbed up, got a chair, mm-hmm. and tossed it all away for a
stupid guy.
Like dysfunctional, mm-hmm. ridiculous white man.
Yeah.
So that narrative in there of uh-huh. a woman of color working that hard to get to that place and then mm-hmm. saying, you know what, I'm tossing it all away. Mm-hmm. First of all, I think that she's likely to be a hell of a lot more savvy than that mm-hmm. to be like, oh no, I don't understand this. It's mm-hmm. like you've played the game yeah, to right. get tenure,
right.
to be an Asian woman doing American literature, to mm-hmm. get tenure in a private blah, blah, blah. You know the game. Mm-hmm. So that was another place where I saw a flaw in the narrative where it was like, really? Mm-hmm. And why? Why do we have to have, why does this storyline have to end this way?
Right, so exactly.
We haven't
even talked about what's his name. I mean, I don't even remember his name.
I don't want to talk about him. Bill. Bill.
Bill, yeah.
Isn't that his name?
Bill. I think his name is Bill, yeah. And he's just, I mean, he's so, I mean, I guess in a way we should be thankful that how beautifully realized his character is in the show because he is that guy. And I hate that guy.
I'm just going to be really upfront. And I said this to you when we started the episode. And I don't know the actor's name. I'm mm-hmm. sorry, because I just but don't. I don't retain that shit.
That
I don't
terrible
care
guy
about.
In Transparent.
I hated him in Transparent. He came on the screen, and I said, "Oh my God, I hate him."
Right.
And then I said, "Oh my God, I hated his character in Transparent." And then he was being the same uh-huh. character, like exactly. the same self-absorbed, self-destructive, right. dickish, right.
bringing women down with him.
Right. Mm. And it was just like, "Oh my God."
Yeah.
I know. I can't believe I have to watch this again out mm-hmm. of you, dude. I think you're typecast or you're not acting. One of the two. Yeah. But yeah, it was the the sort of superstar, you know, sexy superstar thing. And then you can make a mess all over the place while we're asking the black woman over here to change her syllabus and deal mm-hmm. with this white guy so mm-hmm. she can appease everybody. Mm-hmm. Well, I think it was a perfect illustration of what happens in the Academy and the great white man. The great genius.
And
idea.
Let's just speak directly to the great gigantic plot hole or flaw. The flaw is that he lost his job. And come on, wouldn't have happened. Everybody right. pointed this out. It goes without saying in a real campus, a white guy, tenured white guy does not lose his job for racism.
Right.
Does not.
No.
Has it ever happened? I can't think of an example.
No, he may get shunted off to go be the assistant dean of assistant deans of assistant deans and get a steady, easier job. That's all I've ever seen is like, oh, you've been accused of sexual harassment. You've been accused of being mm-hmm. a racist prick. You've been accused mm-hmm. of this. Oh, well, we'll take you out of the classroom. Mm-hmm. We'll keep paying you.
I mean, I want to make a distinction. There are guys who've lost their jobs for sexual harassment. Very, very few.
Right.
Tiny percentage, but a few have. But I have never seen a white guy lose his job because of something that appeared to be racist.
Oh, yeah. I would love to see. I would love to have somebody tell us, because it would be great to have an exception.
Sure. So tell us, please, by all means. But yeah, that so, you know, that being that one of the central pivot points, you know, moving the plot along.
Anti-Semitism, by the way.
Yeah. Anti-Semitism. Right.
It's, I mean, he didn't lose his job for racism. He lost his job for anti-Semitism.
But then I think, oh, gosh, now my faulty memory is coming into play. I remember very distinctly he did the Heil Hitler, and the students got the picture, and then it went all over the place. But then didn't it also, because of the way he addressed the students out on the quad, then the accusation went from there also to basically racism, I think. But, oh, gosh. Anyway, I think that, honestly, probably as a former department head of a humanities department, I think that some of the trauma just of Sandra Oh's, the whole arc of Sandra Oh, I almost don't even remember any other character because I was like, oh my God, it was just, it was too close to the bone.
Right.
But, so I apologize if my memory is faulty on some details, but, and then I was so uncomfortable about Joan, the senior white woman, and I expected her to betray Sandra Oh's character at every turn, and she did, and she didn't, and she did, and she didn't. Right. And I actually, that's kind of accurate in its way, that white women will slide and slither in and out and in and out of, I'm on your side, no, I'm with the white guys, I'm on your side, no, I'm with the white guys. And so, and then leaving and making her department head. I mean, it was very satisfying. It was satisfying, but it was also enraging.
I find no satisfaction in it whatsoever. I don't understand what you think is satisfying. I was just pissed. Yeah. The whole last scene, the whole thing, I don't know if it's the last scene. It's the last scene seared in my memory, which is the vote around the table and her becoming chair.
Right.
And Sandra Oh saying, well, you know, I nominate you because you'll have an office.
Uh-huh.
And all of it was just like, fuck this shit.
Right.
I mean,
right.
That was just like, that was movie making. But then, you know, you got to come back at some point and go, or TV making, okay, it's a TV show, it's a TV show, it's a TV show, which is hard to remember when it activates so many, you know, experiences and memories and observations and things you're watching play out in your, in all the people we work with and the conversations we're having with them and the department chairs and the black women coming up for tenure and, I mean, we're seeing it all happening, so it's super hard to separate it and make it a TV show. Mm-hmm. But so I had to, in that moment, go, it's a TV show. Of course, she's going to give the woman the thing. So she has an office and has to have a narrative arc and clothes and blah, blah, blah. Right. Of course, I'm sure it's coming back for another season, and I can't wait to see what happens with that. I think so. I don't think it was a limited series. Okay. I think it's a... maybe I even read that it's coming back. Boy, we're well informed today. Yeah. Maybe I thought that. Maybe I saw that.
Actually, I think it is coming back for another season.
So
yeah.
All right. So this is the there we did it. This is one of those ones that this was against my will. I did not want to talk about the chair. I felt like it had all been said, and so. But you're right. We have opinions, and we get to be pissed off at all sorts of things. So that's my take on the chair.
All right.
Bullshit. I mean, oh my God, my two feelings of the chair were, oh my God. And this is bullshit and fuck you. I mean, so basically. But
honestly, isn't that your reaction to everything?
You know, no, that's not fair, because I have a whole other thing of like, oh, wow, that is a painful thing that happened. Oh, I see that. Oh, there's, I mean, I can I can call on compassion way more readily than you can, I know. But it was just like, fuck you all. Fuck this.
Yeah.
You know, anyway. All right. There we go.
All right. Thanks,
everybody. Welcome back, folks.
See you next time.
Bye. Bye. One last note here. This podcast is made possible every week by the exceptional work of our editor and producer, Stephanie Blair. If you happen to need audiovisual work, be sure you go check out baddieblair.com, BaddieBlair.com. And also, I encourage you to check out her phenomenal home decor and apparel designs, and you can check those out at chochochen.com, chochochen.com. As always, Stephanie Blair, we are grateful for your incredible talent. Thank you.